Pickaxe.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, and welcome back to The Review of Death, your fortnightly home for Doctor Who news and reviews. I am Matthew Toffolo, sat in my room in Bristol, and joining me, sat in New Zealand, is Billy Garrett-Johns.
Hello. Hello, everybody. How are we doing?
Good. Good. I've got a little light on this webcam and I was staring directly into it and I'm just seeing stars. I've got the Peter Howell title sequence, Sid Sutton Titans title sequence
better.
In my eyes. Just
That sounds good. Have you ever done that thing where you press your palms into your eyeballs and then you can see the Hartnell title sequence?
Yeah. Yeah. Good fun. Good fun.
Yeah, good fun.
So this is an unscheduled little prologue to today's main feature, which is the Doctor's wife. As a lot of you know who watch the podcast or listen to the podcast frequently, you'll know that we recorded a lot of this stuff before Billy went away to New Zealand. So we've got The Doctor's Wife coming up, and then we've got underrated Doctor Who episodes, the sequel to our overrated episode that we did a few weeks back. But because there's been so much Doctor Who news lately, it was going swimmingly because there was no Doctor Who news at all for the last few weeks. But now there's a massive flood of Doctor Who news. In fact, Doctor Who news broke an hour ago today.
I know, we timed that well, didn't we? So Murray Mintz Gold is back.
Yeah.
To lend his bombastic style to the show again.
Yeah. Tug at your heartstrings.
Tug at your heartstrings and inform you. You must be sad. You must cry now. there was a bit of confusion, I think, as to whether or not he was just doing the 60th or if this is a long-term thing. But in the video that they announced it, he said, we're doing Doctor Who 2023 and then referred to it as RTD2. So I guess that means the foreseeable. I think Russell put something on Instagram that said he's doing Doctor Who's next season.
Yeah.
So, I assume that's what's going on.
I think TV Zone or maybe the press release confirmed that it was the 60th and then on to Shooty Gatwa's festive special and then the following season. I mean, we talked about this before, you and I, because it came up a lot, didn't it? You know, who's going to do the music? And I think we kind of assumed it would be Murray Gold just because Russell has had a continuous working relationship with Murray on all of his projects, I think, since Doctor Who. And I think you and I kind of said, well, for the 60th, that makes sense. You know, the 10th Doctor is kind of coming back. Donna's coming back. All those characters, you want that nostalgia. You want that continuity of the music. But I cannot help but feel maybe just a little bit disappointed that they didn't go with someone new and something fresh and different.
I'm with you. I was racking my brain to try and find a word to describe it because I feel like disappointed maybe seems a bit loaded.
Yeah.
I understand because I was like, I can't really think of anything else. I think I'm just a bit bummed out that they didn't do something different because and I'm sure Murray's sound will change and will evolve because, you know, it's not like he's going to be able to reuse all the same cues that he did for the 12 years he was on the show. Repeat for 6 hours. But I sort of feel like it would have been nice maybe to have him back for the 60th because it seems the getting back together. That's kind of the thrust of the 60th, even with like Donna coming back and, you know, Tennant. But I would have liked somebody new for season 14, series 14. Yeah. That would have been ideal. I don't know who, but, you know, Doctor Who's music always changes. It always evolves.
Yeah.
And it kind of feels a bit weird, unless you're Dudley Simpson or Murray Gold. But it sort of feels weird to sort of be sliding back, you know, artistically in that sense. Like, it should be changing. And it would have been an opportunity with Disney to do something very different.
Yeah,
but I guess they know it works. So
I guess so, and I mean, it would. You mentioned Dudley Simpson there, and it does feel a bit like, imagine if during the McCoy era they were like, right, we're going to get Dudley Simpson back to the score.
Sure.
But I'm sure it will be fine. I mean, it now makes. This is obviously something that's probably been in the works since day dot when they were doing this. Yeah. Because, you know, we kept saying all of the promotional stuff since The Power of the Doctor, where everything swapped to the diamond logo, I keep wanting to say R2-D2, RTD2.
Just say it.
Yeah, R2-D2. Since R2-D2 took over, you know, all the publicity stuff, the music has all been Murray's Doctor Who theme. And we kind of said, oh, is that because maybe Murray's doing the music and perhaps they want his flavor, I mean, you know, already stamped on it. I mean, we had the Blue Peter stuff last week. There was Doctor Who on Blue Peter last Friday. Yeah. And that was introduced with the Murray Gold theme. And I thought at the time, I was like, oh, still using the Murray theme. And now we know why. So, but I'm excited to hear what he comes up with. I mean, I am assuming it's going to be kind of similar to what he did with Russell before, if they're going with the series 4 theme on all the other stuff.
I don't know if we can take that as too much of an indication. And also, you know, I think he will do something different. I don't think he can come, you know, he wouldn't do that as a musical artist, I think, is basically
all
the same tunes again. I think maybe where our sort of thing about Murray sounding pretty much the same for his whole tenure, maybe just be, it might just be down to the fact that for his last year, they were just ripping tracks off the soundtrack album and using them in the show, either because there wasn't the time or the money to pay him to compose whole new suites of music. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, his version of the theme tune from 2008 is kind of the one from 2006 I think of as the ultimate Murray theme,
me too.
But it is the one that was the most popular and so on. So, you know, we can't take that as too much of an indication of what it's going to sound like. But yeah, I mean, he is saying a safe pair of hands maybe dampens his, you know, his genius to a degree. But I think, yeah, it's going to be familiar territory, which I think is the thing that disappoints me slightly.
Yeah, Jonathan was a bit annoyed because he was like, no, Dudley Simpson must be the longest serving Doctor Who composer. So yeah, he might be in for a bit of disappointment, depending on how long he sticks around for.
True. Well, okay, so that was the thing that dropped today, but we've got a whole slew of news to keep charging through, and there's a lot of stuff. So we're just going to blast through this. So Doctor Who's gone to Funky Town, and the 15th Doctor has a brand new costume, which looks amazing. and brand new hair. It was interesting. The first thing I was drawn to was that silver tie and the pinstripes on the suit. Do we think it's a bit of a sort of tenanty, you know, 10 and 14 mix?
It feels a bit like that, doesn't it? Because I noticed the tie. I mean, I just like that the suit is TARDIS blue, or various shades of TARDIS blue. But he looks so cool. He looks so cool.
Amazing.
And she looked amazing as well. And it looks like it's going to be a fun episode set in the 60s. I love it when the Doctor and the companion dress up to fit in with their surroundings. And obviously, you know, we haven't even really seen anything of Shuti Gatwa's Doctor yet, other than a few behind the scenes pictures, candid pictures. But already we know that he obviously is a bit of a fashionista because he's always wearing something different. He obviously likes his clothes more than any other Doctor.
Excluding his post-regenerative outfit with the open shirt and the tie. Yeah. Is this three different costumes that we've seen him in now?
Four, because there was the filming. Four. There was some filming somewhere in Wales, and he had the beanie on, and he had like the little.
He has a beanie. Of course, he has a beanie. Yeah. Fabulous.
Yeah. How does he get the? Where does the hair come from? That's what I want to know. Does he sonic his hair?
I don't know. Maybe.
Has Doctor Who solved the cure for baldness?
We can only hope. Let me just pat this down a bit. We can only hope. So that was filming in Newport. Do we think it's maybe the same 60s set episode as the Sucky Sucky Monster comes from?
The Sucky Sucky Monster.
Because we know that the kind of the shots we've seen of it, there are people in 60s kind of garb with like 60s
were they? I can't remember.
Kind of dress on. Yeah, I wonder were they? Okay. If that might be.
Oh, it might be then.
The same.
It might be Sucky Slug.
Sucky Slug. We certainly know though that Jinx Monsoon is appearing in these 60s set episodes.
Yeah.
And Jinx Monsoon's costume was revealed, as well as RTD saying they are the Doctor's most powerful enemy yet.
Yeah.
And I think basically now all but confirmed that we're going to get a musical episode, or at least there's going to be music in it.
Yeah, I mean, whether it's going to be because I said the same thing on Twitter, whether it's going to be a full musical episode or whether she is going to be a musical character, which I think is a given. You wouldn't cast Jinx Monsoon and not have them sing something.
Right.
And obviously the keyboard, the piano keys on the lapels of the costume, bit of a dead giveaway. So I hope we get some sort of musical motif going on there, because that would be good fun. And I've been saying for yonks that Doctor Who needs to do a musical episode, because I think it's probably the one genre that Doctor Who hasn't touched upon yet.
Pretty much, yeah. I wonder as well if this coincides with Murray being announced, because you'd imagine, you know, because he wrote, you know, such scintillating tunes as You Put the Devil in Me, You Absolute Filthy Animal. So maybe, you know, he'll be in it as a conductor.
Yeah.
He almost certainly would have written an original song for it. So maybe this is all sort of tying up into.
Perhaps, yeah. Maybe there's a big number that they're going to be filming on location or something, and there's going to be a bit of choreography
and
stuff.
I mean, you know, Doctor Who set reports are generally not the most accurate things in the world, given that, you know, it's always the Rani or Omega coming back every week.
Mm.
But I do wonder if somebody's report that they could hear Jinx Monsoon singing inside the venue they were shooting in Newport is legit, because
it would make sense. And Doctor Who's going to be filming in Bristol again, because that street where they were filming the Christmas special stuff with the TARDIS up in Clifton, apparently that's all been dressed up again for Christmas. So I guess they're doing some reshoots or
maybe
going back to film some other bits.
Talking of reshoots and or new bits being filmed, it looks like David Tennant has donned the spiky hair and sideburns again. And it might be something to do with the Fortnite leak that we talked about on the Patreon Q&A or catch-up thing. They're shooting like a special trailer for Fortnite to announce that they've got Doctor Who skins in it.
Yeah.
And the script that supposedly leaked, refers to, we assume, David Tennant's new Doctor as the Edge Doctor, which of course would be a reference to the Guardians of the Edge from Power of the Doctor.
I see.
So I wonder if the 14th Doctor, Monica, is actually going to be replaced some point soon, which sounds fine to me.
Yeah. Oh, God. It gets too confusing. There's too many names, too many offshoot Doctor Who's. I mean, I think Georgia Tennant posted a picture of her husband on his birthday with a slice of birthday cake in costume as Doctor Who, as the 14th Doctor, and posted something saying like, oh, he always dresses like that for his birthday. Obviously knowing that she's going to get a slew of questions saying, when was this taken?
Hey, look. We know that Russell is, you know, and was, and a number of people who I'm sure are back working in the bones of the show. If it's not them, then they've learned from these people, are masters of promotion. And they know, I'm sure, I mean, maybe they haven't quite tagged on to things like Fortnite leakers being their own separate entity that are actually literally going to hack into shit and pull code out of the game that hasn't been released yet and leak it. But they all know Like, I'm sure David would have probably said, no, if he thought that, that was going to compromise something when they took that photo, even if it was from his birthday. God, who knows? There's so much spin involved in RTD and one. It seems to me that we're going to get some kind of specially shot trailer, as the leak suggests.
That'd be really cool. Just going back to what you said about Jinx Monsoon and what Russell said about, oh, the Doctor's most powerful enemy. And I know a lot of people were taking this quite literally, and they were sort of saying, oh my God, that's very similar to what was said about Neil Patrick Harris. And oh my God, are they the same character? Are they a Time Lord? Is it different regenerations, etc.? I mean, I think all of those points are valid. But at the same time, I think just from a publicity machine that Russell is, and he's such a clever man, you know, you're not going to introduce a baddie into Doctor Who and say, this week we've got this character coming back who is playing the Doctor's semi-powerful enemy, not quite as good as the Master, but slightly...
This week's one gets dispatched a bit more easily than the one from last week, but they're still pretty powerful.
On the scale of Omega to Sutek, he's somewhere in the middle.
Somewhere in the middle. And also, I saw people saying, well, you know, interesting, like side-by-side photos of Neil Patrick Harris and Jinx Monsoon. They're both wearing black and white. They both got referred to in the same way. And it's like, but we know that Jinx Monsoon is shooting for series 14. And we know that they're probably not going to appear in the 60th. Yeah. So, you know, again, it's just funny. It's funny how reactionary Doctor Who fans are, like we aren't. but you know, it's funny how that sort of stuff just happens, and it's like, no, chill out, guys, it's cool. You know, that these are mutually exclusive events. We don't have to be tying everything together. Terrible.
Fast forward to the future when we then see that they actually are playing the same person.
I'm doing talking bollocks. Is the Valiard?
Black
terrible
and white.
Things will happen. Terrible things will happen to Donna, according to RTD on Insta. Oh no, I wonder what that will be. Maybe her head will literally explode in the 60th anniversary. That would be interesting. We've also got some casting news and some director news. I've been practicing this, and I'm going to hopefully smash it first time. Majid Mehdizadeh Valujerdi is going to be in series 14, appearing in episode 3. Maybe that's what they're filming now. Maybe that's why that cast.
Oh, perhaps that's why that was announced.
But it is directed by Julie Ann Robinson, who I think has got previous chops directing. I'm sure they do anyway. But interestingly, was previously the exec on Bridgerton, Orange is the New Black, Parks and Rec, and The Good Place. So they obviously have quite a stylistic, kind of thing that they do. I mean, Bridgerton is just one of the most luscious looking TV shows ever. But it's also sort of dreamy, and you know, Parks and Rec has sort of flights of fancy sometimes. So and The Good Place,
and The Good Place as well,
fantastical. So I mean, that might suit a musical kind of bent if you had a director involved like that. But they're also directing, joining fellow Series 14 directors, Mark Chisel, Dylan Holmes-Williams, and Mark Tondorai, who is coming back, having already directed The Ghost Monument and Rosa for Doctor Who. So that's kind of cool. That's kind of interesting. Also on a behind-the-scenes front, I've noticed, and I'm sure other people have as well, but it's difficult when you think, oh, I'm going to tweet this. And you think, okay, but somebody might have tweeted this 900 times while I was sleeping. You know, because that's kind of where most of the Doctor Who rumors and stuff emanates from, is the UK, and it's overnight. But the official Doctor Who YouTube channel has been uploading a lot of confidential clips over the past like week or so from series 4. And I know that they are doing this kind of like, it's a season of behind the scenes photos on Instagram and Twitter and blah blah blah. But I wonder if they are softening us up for a return of Doctor Who Confidential, or this Doctor Who Unleashed thing that was kind of leaked a while ago. And that clip of Murray,
I was just going to say,
came out, you know, the cameras are following Russell, which was something that people spotted basically from the first day of shooting, public shooting on the 60th, is he was being followed by a camera crew and apparently Louis Theroux, although that was never confirmed and I think was probably bollocks. That seems to me, that clip seems to be right out of Confidential's playbook to shoot something like that.
Oh, very much so. And I think David Tennant might have spilled the beans at a convention a couple of weekends ago. I think he said something about the behind the scenes show. So, yeah.
So I would not be surprised if we hear something soon, basically.
It's funny now thinking back to that filming that was happening last summer, because it seems so far away now and we still haven't seen any of that stuff. But how crazy and exciting was it to see all the old players coming back?
I know.
Filming stuff. Oh, bonkers. Really
and
weird.
And such public filming as well. Like they could afford to go to London. This is unheard of. Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, yeah. That was the first indicator, like, oh, this has got some Wonga behind it, this show. There is a Blue Peter competition, Matt.
Yeah.
Are you going to apply?
No, for I am 16 years too old to apply for such competitions. But my nephews can. So I'm going to do my best.
They might have a bit of influence from the two toffs in the household to, you know, so make sure you get it right. Otherwise, you're not getting fed this evening.
Yeah. Precisely. Yeah. So they better come up with something good. My brother said, why don't we submit a piece of artwork drawn by myself and then just put their name on it?
Do you know what? My uncle did that once when he was at uni to get a Blue Peter badge. And I thought, that's a gobshite thing to do. I would never do anything like that. So instead, I bought a Blue Peter badge off of eBay instead. So at least I didn't take it off a child. I'm very interested to see what the commemorative 60th Blue Peter crossover pack looks like, because apparently they've got about 500 of those to give away. Yeah. So that will be something that will probably appear on eBay again within a couple of hours of them turning up. That might be a cool collectible item if people can get their hands on it.
Very much so. And they also said in the same press release something about the announcement will be joined alongside a big CBBC, BBC iPlayer takeover of Doctor Who takeover of CBBC and iPlayer. Yeah. So who knows? I mean, perhaps all this stuff about Russell trying to get old Doctor Who onto iPlayer might be something.
I mean, I think that's been in the works for a while. I think even before Christmas, we were talking about that being a thing. Because we saw on the, I mean, I know it's probably just a operational thing, but on BritBox, Doctor Who was supposed to disappear basically on New Year's Day or like on Christmas Day, and didn't, obviously. But I think that, that's almost certainly going to expire soon. And I think that Russell would probably want things on iPlayer. Maybe we'll hear that there's going to be a CBBC spin-off, because I'm sure that Russell will cater to that.
Yeah.
You know, you have the adult show, you have the kids show, and Doctor Who kind of sits in the middle. I wonder if maybe UNIT will actually be the CBBC show.
And, maybe.
You know, we'll have a grungier, sexier thing for the adults. But we'll be interesting to see what happens. Did you watch the show last week where they made TARDISes out of juice cartons?
I watched a little bit of it, yes. It was
very sweet.
It was very sweet. It was my big takeaway from it was the Murray Gold music and how lovely the diamond logo looked around the trim of that table. I was like, oh, nice.
I know. It is a stunner. They know what they were doing, bringing that back. Yeah. The first part of the multi-platform spanning adventure Doomsday has been revealed, Matthew. Titan Comics are bringing back our favorite incarnation of the Master.
Oh, yeah. Is it... That guy from the film. Gordon Tipple.
do you want a little hint?
Go on then.
She's got Norks.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh well, never mind.
I found it interesting that it's Missy and not Sacha Dhawan. Interesting, like they've sort of, let's forget about him for now and go back to something else.
That's a bit of a pisser, isn't it? It does sort of feel like they have got their, these are our I don't know, our archetypes going forward. Like the missing master is sort of ubiquitous, like the tenant doctor is ubiquitous as well. Yeah. You know, like that will always be the master that we think of now going forward, or we show going forward. I don't know.
It's weird. But I mean, maybe there's a narrative reason for it. Perhaps when we, when we read it, neither of us are going to read this stuff.
I absolutely no chance. I mean, if Universal have decided they're not going to make any collection sets out here in New Zealand anymore, then I'm sure that the Titan comics, they'll probably be easier to pick up, but that doesn't mean that I will. I will specifically avoid them in that case.
Yeah.
Although, massive shout out to Mum and Dad, who messaged me the other day and said, is there a collection set out at the moment? And I was like, oh yeah, but I can't get it because they're not printing them anymore. They're not making them on this side of the world anymore. And then I got a photo of something collection shaped that had arrived at the house. So they are continuing to buy up the collection sets, which is lovely.
Them.
So I have given them permission to crack them open and go through them and enjoy them, because it will probably be a while before I get to get my hands on them, my grubby little protuberances on them.
It's been really good. I've only looked at Curse of Peladon, but holy shit, Curse of Peladon looks amazing. It is the best it has ever looked. So yeah, you'll enjoy that when you get to see it in HD.
My fave. Actually looking watchable. Brilliant.
Yeah.
The BFI are screening a 16mm black and white print of Spearhead from Space Matt on the 11th of June. Have you got your ticket yet?
No, because I didn't know until I saw your document this morning. Where was this announced?
I don't know. I saw it on Twitter, and I think it was somebody like taking a photo of a screen inside the BFI, and it's like 16mm... Spearhead from Space. Now, it apparently has nothing to do with the collection.
Right.
Because even though the screening is happening at the South Bank, it's actually in a smaller screening room to the main one that they usually use for the collection screenings. But what a cool little thing.
Yeah.
Like, if you get the opportunity, folks, go down and enjoy it, because I'm sure it will look amazing.
That's really interesting, isn't it? I wonder if the collection set, when they eventually do season 7, I wonder if that will have both the colour and the black and white to be watched.
Maybe what they should do now is, you can flick through like different versions of subtitles and da-da-da-da-da. Maybe they should do, right, with the press of the button, you can watch it in black and white.
Yeah.
With the press of a button, you can watch the old DVD restoration. And with the press of a button, you can watch the old shit 90s version that they used to give to UK Gold.
Yeah. I mean, I'd beautiful. Love it. That'd be great. I still think, I know it annoys me really that they've never done, I think they should, for each set, they should have a proper side-by-side comparison for every story. Just a few clips just to say, right, this is how it looked, is the original master tape.
Yeah.
And here it is over the years, and this is it now. I think the reason why they don't do that is because I think sometimes, especially with 80s stories, the quality between DVD and Blu-ray is marginal at best, so perhaps they're a bit like, oh shit, we don't want people to look at it and go, oh well.
I think that's right, because like when the Silurians came out on DVD, because that had only really been released previously in black and white, I think, on VHS.
I think that might have been colorized.
They had the black and white one, and then they obviously had the off-air color recording from the States, and like they had the features about how that stuff was brought together. That's really interesting. I think maybe for season 7, it would be worth seeing how they, how they deal with Spearhead, because it is obviously totally shot on film. But you're right. I think you're right. It's like there's no point doing a side by side, because it might sort of reveal how close they are anyway. Yeah.
But we knew that going into it, didn't we, really? Because it is just, it's TV, isn't it? It's not film, HD film,
But think about how much AI like stuff has come on since the collection set started. You could theoretically do a 4K upscaled AI enhanced, collection set now. You could. I was listening the other day to somebody had taken a Paul McCartney song and they had stripped the vocal and had processed it through AI, and they made a 2012 Paul McCartney song sound like he sang it in 1967. So, they couldn't even fix Paul McCartney's voice on Glastonbury when he did it last year. So if you can do that sort of shit now, then, who knows? The sky's the limit. We'll see what happens.
I can't buy any more copies of Revenge of the Cybermen. I have too many.
You will. once they can AI change the fact that Christopher Robbie's got his hands on his hips for the whole episode as the cyber leader, you'll want the version without the hands on hips.
Oh no, that's part of the magic.
It is. That's magic that Disney can't bottle and sell to us.
Yeah.
So, you know, God
bless
the
Cybermen.
That's
all I want to see in Disney Cybermen. Hands on hips.
Lots of hands on hips and lots of talking like that. That would be perfect. And that is kind of everything that has happened, unless you can think of anything, Matt.
I kind of can, and I think I'm safe in saying this. So we talked about this on the Patreon, that there was a leak regarding the B&M sets. So I say a leak. It came directly from B&M's own catalogue thing. Some guy who works there put it out on Facebook, as has happened for the last few years. And I think it was, I can't remember the sets now. There's a Deadly Assassin set. There's a Five Doctors two-pack. And there's Ultimate Adventure, Sixth Doctor and TARDIS. And then
Mad.
Some History of the Dalek sets that I can't remember. A new series one.
There's a new series Dalek set, yeah.
New series one. And
I think there's a Remembrance one, is there?
Remembrance and Revelation.
Okay.
I don't know if there's a Resurrection one. I think it's Revelation and Remembrance. But since we spoke about this last time, someone has been in contact with B&M, and someone at B&M has confirmed that these are the only six sets being released by B&M this year. So unlike previous years where we've had our few sets in the summer and then later in the winter, unfortunately, that's not the case this time. Now, I have no idea why. I can only assume, if I was a betting man, and please don't take this as read because I don't actually know. I can only assume that maybe if they want to push merchandise for the new series, which I'm sure there will be merchandise from the new series, perhaps they didn't want classic stuff or older stuff at B&M, because that would be the same sort of time. They would usually come out around October, November. So maybe they didn't want that muddying the waters. I don't know. I could be talking completely out of my arse. That was just my speculation.
My initial, when you first said that, was thinking, well, they've got the online exclusives. We know they do the online exclusives now.
Yeah.
So that is like a whole other thing of like, well, when will they get announced? You know, there's no way of actually knowing unless you have somebody on the inside, a character.
Yeah.
And also, you know, not to say anything bad about B&M or be an arsehole about B&M or whatever, but I would imagine that Russell probably wants stuff back in Tesco's, Sainsbury's,
exactly.
Asda. And if all this stuff is now, like we saw with the regeneration set with the 14th Doctor and the 13th Doctor in the, you know, Power of the Doctor garb, I would guess that it's all going to carry the new logo anyway.
Yeah.
So probably best to get all that stuff out of B&M once the machine kicks off in November.
Yeah.
So maybe that means this is the last load of stuff coming out from B&M.
I don't know. I mean, there was no indication from the response that this B&M guy gave that it was going to be the last sets. But perhaps if it isn't the last sets, maybe, I'm just looking at the dollies over here now, maybe it's just going to be, well, anything post 2023 will be in major shops or Character Online's exclusive stuff. And then any classic stuff or older Russell T Davies stuff or Moffat and Chibnall stuff, that will all be B&M only. And again, with that same sort of limited budget and, you know, head swaps here and that kind of stuff. So I don't know. It's interesting to see what will happen, but hopefully there'll be some more Doctor Who dollies to come.
Speaking of the Patreon, we have been still producing stuff over there all the while. I've been here in New Zealand, so there is like a new Q&A. There's like a whole thing on there where we catch up with each other and go over news that hasn't been covered here. Mm-hmm. So that's to do with B&M and other Doctor Who related bits and bobs. And we're still going to keep going with the Patreon stuff. I mean, next week, we are hoping to get our first ever audio drama review out and done. I've already started writing the notes for it, and I've uncovered some interesting stuff, to say the
least. Have you listened to it yet?
No, I'm going to save that for, we've got a big drive, which is going to basically be, even though we are splitting it, so we're going to have a rest in the middle, which we didn't do last time. Last time we did a 19-hour drive from
what,
the South Island all the way up to Auckland. Yeah.
Fucking
so
hell.
We're not going to do that this time. We're going to stop off, but I can use that time to listen to Doctor Who and the Pescatons, which I assume is how you pronounce it. I haven't listened to it before.
And I believe it's only 45 minutes long, the whole thing.
Okay, I will just put it on repeat then, and then I will reiterate the whole thing to you exclusively on Patreon. I'll play all the characters. I'll play Zog, or whatever his name is, and the Doctor, and Sarah Jane.
But I've got the novelization down here somewhere.
Or you need to play through that in a week, or give it to Annie, and then Annie can give you the cliff notes, because Annie will blast through that.
Yeah, that's true. There we are. That's a homework.
Perfect. Yeah, Annie, we've set you some homework there. Or you could give it to Johnny, and Johnny's kids could read a page each, and they could each write 500 words, and we could just read that out.
God.
So we have got that coming out next week. And then once we hit 200 patrons, which we are like, you know, almost in single digits before we hit 200 patrons, which is nuts. We are going to record and release our commentary and review of Shakedown, Return of the Sontarans. And beyond all of that, you hear about what's going on with the podcast, our upcoming guest interviewee, which will be hopefully recorded in the next month, which is really exciting. Somebody we've spoken about talking to for a long time. And you can hear about the new refresh with the Review of Death. There's a brand new theme tune. You can access that on the Review of Death Discord. And I'll be speaking to our animator tomorrow morning, my time, tomorrow evening, your time.
Oh my God.
And I'll be, honestly, you have to be a Doctor Who fan to understand the kind of time implications of what's going on.
It's perfect, isn't it, really, that we've got into this situation?
It pays off being a Doctor Who fan to understand time displacement and the headaches that comes with. But yeah, so we're going to be leaking some of our own Doctor Who title sequence fun over on the Review of Death Patreon. Next up, you're going to be seeing the review of The Doctor's Wife. That's coming right now. Mm-hmm. Then the week after that, or 2 weeks after that, as Matt said, we've got the underrated episodes. And then after that, 2 weeks after that, Jonathan Toflow makes his almighty return to the Review of Death podcast, to the sofa of reasonable comfort. Maybe the last time we see the sofa for a little while.
Yeah,
we don't know yet. You know, we'll have to see what happens there. But it was put out. There was a big, big poll on the Review of Death Patreon that got whittled down to 4 choices from 13. So you nearly had to review the Romans. So I've, you know, you've dodged that bullet at least.
Thank God.
And we have whittled. Oh no, 4 to Doomsday. That was the kicker. That was the one. Where
oh
I was
my
like,
God!
That's really cruel.
No,
that's really cruel. But we whittled that down to 4, and then a public vote has decided on Twitter that you and Matthew, you and Jonathan, time displacement, are going to be reviewing the TV movie, which is kind of massive. So that's coming up for episode 52. You're going to get a whole spiel about how much Johnny hates Sylve's costume.
Wonder why that was picked.
I wonder. But it's also going to be cool hearing, because, you know, like, you guys, that's your first new Doctor Who, wasn't it? You know, and Johnny being a fan previously, it's going to be really interesting to be like, how did you find out about it coming back?
Yeah.
When did you first watch it? What did you think of it at the time? How has it changed? Lots to dig into. So that will be lots and lots of fun.
Brilliant. Well, in that case, thank you, Billy, for waking up so early.
Thank you, Matthew, for waking me up so early.
And for the rest of you listening at home, enjoy our review of The Doctor's Wife now.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey all, I'm Dr. Alok Kanoja, but the internet knows me as Dr. K. I spent 7 years studying to become a monk and then became a psychiatrist. I want to tell you a little bit about my podcast, Healthy Gamer GG. where we combine my clinical experience of practicing psychiatry and sprinkle in years of experience as a meditation teacher and sort of focus on spirituality. So on the podcast, we're going to approach very common everyday problems from each of these lenses. And what we really do well is blend science and spirituality to create the most accessible solutions for people for their everyday problems. So check us out at HealthyGamerGG on YouTube, Spotify, or Apple.
Hello, and welcome to The Review of Death, a Doctor Who podcast, your fortnightly home for Doctor Who news and reviews. That's Billy Garrett John.
It is.
I'm Matthew Toffolo.
It is.
We're talking about the Doctor's wife.
Mm.
That story from 2012?
Or
11?
Yeah, there we go. You got there.
Series 6.
Yeah.
That infamous on this podcast.
Pantheon of shite.
Yeah, for that very reason.
We've only done Closing Time.
Yeah.
Which I forgot was even in Series 6 because it's part of the second part of Series 6.
Oh yeah, this was a split one.
When he gets his
green, awful green coat.
Great coat and his Stetson.
Stupid hat.
Yeah. Well,
that sums it up, doesn't it? You put the Doctor in a shit costume that doesn't work.
Mm.
And it just sets the tone in a story called Let's Kill Hitler, which is wank.
Yeah.
And then it ends with a story that's also part of wank. Wow, we're only a couple of minutes in and I'm already shitting on this series. But we're not talking about those stories.
Episode 62, Let's Kill.
Oh no!
Hitler.
Please,
Every time you do it, I'm adding another one.
I need to start doing stuff like, oh, Genesis of the Daleks.
Genesis of the Daleks.
Drives me bollocks.
But I know you're lying. Come on. The Doctor's Wife, written by Neil Gaiman.
Wow.
Ooh.
Mm, I remember thinking that at the time.
Directed by Richard Clarke, who, if I spool down to the bottom of my notes,
yeah,
had previously directed Gridlock.
Cool, yeah.
The Lazarus Experiment. And
yeah.
And then go on to helm Night Terrors later in Series 6.
Yeah, that's another one that I can't really...
No?
It doesn't really... Oh, God!
Episode 63. No. Okay. Well, we should do it because it was shot around the corner.
It was, yeah.
Yeah. And at... Oh, I forget the name of the... I should tell you the story when we actually do it, but I'll reiterate it because it's going to be at least another dozen episodes until we talk about it. But I went to whichever stately home they shot the interior of the Doll's House in. I forget the name of it, but it's like in the West Country somewhere.
It's not the same one where they did Thin Ice.
That's King's Weston.
King's Weston, yeah.
And I was filming an episode of the Doctor Who fan film series that I did with my cousins.
Right.
And I was wearing a t-shirt that I got from H&M. Can you believe that they did this back then?
Right.
It's a black t-shirt and in sort of glittery silver, it was the neon logo.
Wow,
and I was
cool.
Filming this thing. And once it was done, we left. And then this old woman ran up to me and said, the location people from Doctor Who are here and they just wanted me to tell you that they love your t-shirt. So they were scouting for Night Terrors on the day that we were there.
I think you're going to say the location people from Doctor Who are here and they're going to fucking sue your ass
for
using their location.
Stop fucking following us. 7.
Here's a restraining order. Small boy.
7.97 million viewers.
Wow.
And it won the 2011 Ray Bradbury Award for Outstanding Dramatic Presentation.
Fuck off.
And the 2012 Hugo Award for Dramatic Presentation Short Form. Maybe because it had Neil Gaiman's name on it.
God, bloody hell. Piss poor year for literature, if that's the case.
UK number one. Piss poor year for fucking songs and music. Films as well.
don't know.
Lazy Song by Bruno Mars. Today I don't feel like anything. I can't get this back in the hole. UK box office. 4 was number one at the time this episode went out.
Right, okay.
As the comic book person in the group, what do we think of Thor?
I quite liked Thor.
The original one?
I liked the first one, yeah.
What about the one with Christopher Eccleston in it?
Shit, I can't remember anything about it.
Is he good in it?
I can't remember anything about it. I forget he's in it.
That weekend that this story went out, Attack the Block
Oh, yeah.
Featuring one Jodie Whittaker.
Oh, yeah. Who's she? What's she going on to do?
I don't know. She might have been in Doctor Who at some point. Debuted at number 3.
Right.
Also this year, Green Lantern.
Oh.
Is that Ryan Reynolds?
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Transformers Dark of the Moon.
Right. And I can't remember any of those films. They'll blend into one.
The Inbetweeners movie.
Right, yeah.
That is good fun. And very Moffat-y. The Adventures of
What, Inbetweeners?
Lots of
clunge.
Clunge. and The Adventures of Tintin, The Secret of the Unicorn.
I've still not seen that.
Which he was attached to.
Yeah.
And then got the Doctor Who job and went, this is too much for me. Sorry, I'm going to have to, you know, pull out of this. And then was like, right, I'm all in for Doctor Who. What's that, Mark? You want to do an adaptation of Sherlock? Let's do that too then as well. Yeah. I'm sure that won't at all affect the quality of the scripts that I'm writing for the main show I was hired for.
Yeah.
So going into this,
yeah.
What were your...
I mean, it's funny, isn't it, really? Because this is the series. You know, the series is split.
Mm.
I mean, I don't know how public this is, but I mean,
it was
heavily rumoured at the time that things weren't going well because he was juggling too many plates, and so Doctor Who had to get
juggling a bit more than that.
Oh yeah, and that, but you know, and so Doctor Who had to be split in two,
yeah,
because they couldn't get stuff done on time.
Yeah, and it seems,
and for Series 7, fucking hell.
I mean, Series 7 is a whole other beast as well.
Yeah,
but it when you read about the production of this story. And I think this maybe has a bit of a knock-on effect when we eventually come to talk about Nightmare in Silver, because yeah. Nightmare in Silver is notably...
Shit.
Neil... yeah? No, and that. But it's notably Neil Gaiman's last script for Doctor Who. And you think, really, realistically, there's no reason why it should have been his last script. But there are echoes of script rewrites and issues with the production that are maybe starting here that actually get exacerbated by the time we get to Series 7, that he went, I can't work on something that's unstable as this.
I would love to see the like early drafts that Neil Gaiman wrote before things got tweaked.
Of this story.
Well, especially Nightmare in Silver. Because I mean, from what I understand, Nightmare in Silver ended with a whole...
It's a two-parter.
It was a two-parter. There was Invasion Cybermen in it.
Yeah.
And then at the end, there's like a whole meeting of all different old Cybermen. And there's like a 10th Planet one in like a throne or something.
That sounds a bit like this story that we're going to talk about, because I didn't really appreciate the levels of... Okay, he's a Doctor Who fan.
Oh, it's fan wankery left, right and centre, isn't it, this
But when it's like, we're going to build a TARDIS console.
Yes!
And it's like, at the time, I probably didn't appreciate how exciting that was, but it sounds really exciting, and we'll get onto it. But I think that's kind of the TARDIS stuff is the best part of the story.
Yeah, I think anyone would write this and say, if anyone else was to write it, they'd just say, we're going to build a TARDIS. But when he said console, that does make you think, okay, he's a nerd.
It's beautiful. It makes you also wonder what came first, Susanna Lee's TARDIS console design.
Right, yeah.
As a junkyard TARDIS.
Yeah.
Or the idea of building a TARDIS in the junkyard, and then they just said, which one looks like it's been put together with bits and bobs the most?
Yeah.
And they went for that one.
Yeah. I mean, it was good enough to get a playset.
Do you think she got any residuals from that?
I doubt it.
That's a bit fucked up.
It's on the box of the toy. In like tiny writing somewhere, it says.
But Michael,
designed by
Michael Pickwood would have got the majority of the money for that, for designing it. Actually, in a three-dimensional sense, but that's actually her original concept.
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll ask Al to come back on the podcast and find out.
I'll message him, shall I? So like, what's
how much of a percentage? Message her now. Message him now, and we'll see what he comes back with by the end of the episode. So, right from the off, we've got something quite major that happens in this story. This story establishes for the first time that Time Lords can change gender through regeneration.
Yes.
Through the Corsair.
When we watched it, I said to Annie, I was like, is this the first time that this is really properly mentioned? Mm-hmm. I remember at the time being feckin' fuming.
I remember having an argument with somebody on Facebook who I went to school with.
Yeah.
About the idea of Time Lords changing gender.
Yeah.
And I remember trying to argue that the Corsair was like a freak event, you know, like, oh, well, it's never mentioned that any other Time Lord has done it before.
Yeah.
Obviously forgetting that Romana exists.
But she doesn't change her gender. She just changes her race.
Surely...
She goes silver.
She goes silver and turns into a weird fish latex suit thing. But surely by this logic, there is a male Romana out there. I would imagine so.
Yeah.
Is the lottery that... the gender you're born in as a Time Lord is generally the favoured one that your regeneration genetics sort of would reset to, which would explain why Flavia and Romana and etc. And
the thing is, like, Flavia and Romana are very... They sound very... They're very gendered names, I would argue.
Do you think?
I think Romana...
Romana is a kind of pizza.
So what are you telling me, Billy, that really in one of her regenerations she's just 12 inches wide, thin crust,
made of dough and cheese? There we go. And I think as well,
Tom would have loved it. He wanted a talking cabbage as a companion. Talking pizza, here you are, Tom.
He would have been chuffed to have any inanimate object.
Yeah,
Tom would have been happy if it was called the Tom Baker Doctor Who Show. Let me travel through space and time on my own.
And we'd have bloody loved it.
That's it, yeah. That's interesting. And then you have the cube thing that happens
from the,
like,
war games.
From the off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which eventually spins off into its own thing. And we'll talk about whether or not Paul McGann is in this episode later on.
I kept thinking that throughout the whole thing.
There you go. But I think from the off, the fantasy element in this story is pretty... obvious. And I know that the certainly series 5 is like, oh, this is the kind of fantasy
fairy tale Doctor Who,
that's it. But I think that Neil Gaiman shows he's evidently writing the story.
Yeah.
Even from, like, the set design
and
the patchwork people, and it's clearly in the text that this is the way that things should look and feel. And you've got that pre-credit sequence with Auntie and Uncle and Idris. And it looks like, okay, if I was to take a stab in the dark, I would guess Neil Gaiman is somehow involved in this.
Yeah, it feels very sort of storybook. That's the look, I guess.
Mm.
The aesthetic and the music as well has got that sort of twinkly sort of fantasy. It's almost Burton-esque.
It is very Burton-esque. It is. I mean, even the fact that they've made, what's her name, who plays Idris?
Saran Jones.
Is basically, we couldn't afford Helena Bonham Carter to play the TARDIS.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not, no disrespect on Saran Jones at all, but that is the way she's been made to look, isn't it?
The big hair and, yeah.
We'll talk about Idris in a minute because it exacerbates all of my worst hatreds towards this era of the programme and all that sort of stuff. Only at the start, I have to say.
Okay.
I think she gets better.
She settles into it. And I think that's intentional, but, you know, first impressions and everything.
So this bubble universe and all that stuff with the explanation with Matt and with Amy and Rory. And
that's all good fun, isn't it?
So it's like a bubble in the bath, but there's a bubble on the outside. Yes. Well, no, it's nothing like that. All that stuff is so lovely.
Yeah.
And I'll say it here, and I think I will say it for future Matt Smith stories that we do. He is the best part of this story, I think.
Yeah.
I think Matt Smith always delivers.
Yeah.
Matt Smith never has a face on him like, I am struggling to sell what is being put in front
and
of me.
He goes through a lot as well. You know,
a hell of a lot.
He's a rollercoaster of emotions. Mm. You know, I mean, he's bawling his eyes out by the end, which I'd forgotten.
Mm.
And I was like, wow. I didn't realise that this story impacts your character that much.
It doesn't stick with him, though.
No.
But...
And I think that's probably why I was sort of surprised, and I was a bit like, I don't really believe that this is going to... that you should be reacting quite as heavily as you are. Because by next week, everyone's forgotten that this story has happened.
Right. That's interesting. Because I actually... We'll get to it, I guess, a bit more at the end. But I actually teared up at the end.
Oh.
And I think it's because the dialogue in that scene is so good. And Matt Smith and Saran Jones are really good in that moment as well. But also I think that to have, as you're saying, a moment as impactful as the Doctor finally speaking to the TARDIS, to have that sort of immediately forgotten by the next episode does sort of cheapen that moment, because it because it only happens right at the end, and then the fact that it's never brought up again and the Doctor never kind of, but then also you have that coda at the end where he says, you know, can you hear me, and then the handbrake, you know, kind of and that's lovely,
but it
kind of feels like it would be nice every now and again to have the Doctor always talks to the TARDIS, but it's never acknowledged that the Doctor is talking to the TARDIS to try and speak to Idris again.
No.
The Doctor always just talks to the TARDIS like they always talk to the TARDIS.
I think maybe in later stories, possibly even in like Capaldi era, the Doctor will talk to the TARDIS and it will make a bloop boom and it will say, oh, shut up, you know, and he'll talk to it as if it is responding to him. And I wonder if that is an echo of that
idea. Maybe, but
I mean, or is he just a mad bastard who just talks to his... Come
I on. Think it's that.
Yeah.
I think it's more that. I don't think, because otherwise they would maybe make more of a reference to that story having happened. Because it seems like a tentpole in the Doctor's life. And it's played for that in that last scene.
Yeah.
The Doctor finally gets to have a conversation. And specifically the line that made me go, was the bit where she's like, I just wanted to say hello.
Oh, yeah.
Because she's been so addled through the whole story.
Yeah.
That she doesn't actually get to say that.
Yeah.
At the beginning, and so finally it's like, okay, I've actually come to my senses and I've absorbed this, you know, I'm able to process all this stuff so I can actually now communicate with you as the TARDIS.
Yeah.
With you know, with that character that we expect. And even that bit, we'll get to it later maybe, I guess, but I always liked it when you called me old girl.
Yeah.
And all that stuff.
Yeah.
That stuff is really, really, really lovely.
Yeah.
I mean, we've skipped ahead massively there.
But have,
it's almost like we've already covered all the best
stuff
in this story.
What about sexy?
Yeah, nah.
No, never landed with me.
Only if she acknowledges, since you've become very chinny, you've started calling me sexy.
Yeah.
Or since circa 2005, you've started calling me sexy. Because can you imagine, you're very sexy.
Yeah.
Or... oh, you're very sexy. You can't really imagine any other Doctor.
No. Especially not with
having a wank over the console, you know what I mean? It's just like, it's too much.
Yeah.
But it's that Joss Whedon-y, Moffat-y dialogue.
Yeah.
And that is the problem that I have with the story.
That is, exactly my critique as well. That, I mean, I love... I mean, obviously she is... She's so Moffat-y, you know.
She's a woman, and so immediately, I want to fuck the closest male to me.
Yeah, that's it. You know, it's all that thing. I mean, I think all of the stuff with her getting the tenses wrong and, you know, the conversation flowing in the correct order because she's having a conversation from the future, that is great. That is so clever. It makes sense. She's a TARDIS. Brilliant. But, I mean... I paused it while we were watching this and said, right, this is literally a line that Stephen Moffat has nicked from one of his own shows.
What was that?
The line when she...
Biting.
Yeah. It's like kissing, but only there's a winner. He uses it in Jekyll. And I can't remember what is sex. It's like something else, but only there's a winner. And it's just like, ugh. Ugh. It just annoys me. I mean, I'm sure for like... a lot of the audience, that would have gone completely over their heads. But for me, it's just like... Ugh.
That stuff at the start, before she faints for the first time in front of the Doctor, and a little bit of the conversation when she's on her own in the cell, where she's doing all that, oh, and then I talk over here, and then the camera angle changes and she's over here. That is like, I'm hating this.
Yeah.
But I think also the problem is... they've told Saran Jones to play the Doctor.
Yeah.
And they've told Saran Jones... But then also, you could argue, it works because it's Saran Jones playing like a post-regenerative trauma Doctor.
Yeah.
And I kind of understand it from that perspective. But then, because she's a woman, they do the kissing...
Yeah.
And the biting...
Yeah.
And that stuff. And... immediately watching it, that makes me view that character in a completely different way.
Yeah.
Which is disappointing.
Yeah.
But I think it's the fact that it happens so early on kind of troubles me.
And I also think, like, thinking about it now, I was thinking, who else could you have got to play that part? And it probably would have worked for the better. My initial thought was Miriam Margolyes would have made an amazing TARDIS.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wouldn't need, I've got a bloody corset on with my tits up to here. I mean,
there are so many shots looking down her top.
Yeah.
Especially when she's communicating with Rory.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've missed every part of the dialogue that she's just spoken. I'm going to have to go back and watch that bit again. Thank God my dad was too focused on his phone. I mean, maybe he wasn't. Maybe he was trying to look over the
I'll
top of his phone.
To look at my exactly. Phone.
Can you just do that? Rewind that bit again, Bill. I missed that bit of dialogue. Yeah.
Sorry, Ed, because you'll be watching this.
He will be. He'll probably be in bed with mum.
Yeah,
he did. Yeah, it's too much.
And if you did miss it, then you can go back.
It's on BBC iPlayer. There you go. 23 minutes and 32 seconds. It's too much.
Is it
indicative of that period of time of telly?
I don't know if it's necessarily indicative of that time of telly. It's certainly indicative of Stephen Moffat's time on telly.
But were people? Do you think people were saying
what, fucking horny?
No. I know. I'm totally with you. But do you think people were saying this is too much? Did it pass the bechamel test?
Whatever it's called. Bechamel the sauce. No. I think for certain people, yeah, it definitely was an issue. But I think for most people, they just went...
Do you think it's more of an issue now?
I think probably looking back on it, it's probably more problematic. Yeah, I think so.
Mm.
I don't think you'd do it today.
It's
like
more
that.
Unsolicited kissing as well, which Stephen seems really keen on.
Yeah. Yeah, you wouldn't do... Yeah, I mean, I was thinking that. Like, you wouldn't do that in the reverse. You wouldn't have the Doctor be a woman and the TARDIS be a man and the man suddenly...
Come here, love.
...snog Jodie Whittaker.
Yeah. Of course not. No.
So it's...
Talking of unsolicited snogging, what did you think of Amy and Rory in this story?
I mean, they get pushed off to the side to do their own thing. Now... I love all the stuff in the TARDIS with House. House is great. House is a great villain. Michael Sheen does a really good job. It's a shame there's not more to him, which I think is the problem with all of these 45-minute stories, is that the villains in a lot of these stories get the space to breathe.
And he doesn't have space to breathe, because that scene where they get back from the Tennant TARDIS into the Matt Smith TARDIS...
Yeah.
It is just like someone's got a soundboard of Michael Sheen clips
and
they're just playing them back one after the other. He doesn't breathe.
Yeah.
You know, which is why when you get that line, which was in the trailer that everybody thought was Gabriel Wolfe, fear me, I've killed hundreds of the Time Lords, fear me, I've killed all of them, or whatever it was. That doesn't quite land the same way, because he's just, you know, they're trying to squeeze as much dialogue into that scene as possible.
Yeah.
And it definitely feels like it's not been paced in the room with the actors performing against Michael Sheen's voice.
Yes.
It definitely feels like it's been surgically made to work.
Yeah.
You know?
So I love him, but he could have had more space, I think. Mm. But I think all of that stuff in the TARDIS with him tormenting Amy and Rory, really scary, chilling stuff. I remember at the time thinking, wow, this is so at odds with all the wanky stuff we've had at the beginning of like, oh, I'm the TARDIS. Mm. And then you've got this, which is like really dark.
Die, Amy.
Yeah. It's like, wow.
When do you ever see that kind of language or that kind of emotive, you know, phrasing used against a character in Doctor Who?
I mean, you don't.
Hate Amy, die Amy.
Yeah.
All that sort of stuff.
You know, and like that, the dishevelled... foaming at the mouth image of Rory banging his head against the wall.
He just looks like fucking Ringo Starr. That nose is something else. And also, if you notice, his arms and his hands are not made up in the same way his face is.
Oh, really?
So it just looks like he's got a Halloween mask on tucked into his shirt and the rest of his hands
like
and his arms.
Like every Doctor Who fan film ever made.
I mean, it does look like every Doctor Who fan costume ever made in a fan film.
And then, you know, Amy crying over the, you know, the remains, you know, the actual corpse.
And you think, that stinks.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like a skeleton.
Yeah.
There's bits of sinew and muscle caca. And shit. Yeah, there's bits of face caca all over him.
Yeah.
But I had to laugh when it panned over and his, like, I don't know what it was that made me laugh, but him propped up against the thing and his torso kind of looks normal and then his jeans are, like, totally flat against the floor. Really made me laugh. I don't know why. A nice line of dialogue between Rory and Amy, I thought. Rory, he'll be fine. He's a Time Lord. Amy, oh, yeah. It's just the name. It doesn't mean he actually knows what he's doing,
yeah.
Which I thought was That's really
good.
Lovely.
That's good.
Do we think Paul McGann is in this story?
No.
Great.
But that was such a big thing, wasn't it, at the time? Everyone was sure that they heard his voice.
It sounds like
Paul
McGann.
It does sound very similar. It does sound very similar to
Paul
McGann.
I'm here, he says.
I'm here.
There we go. That sounds even better.
I mean, I will say that the Time Lord stuff in the story is really well handled because this is the first time really since the end of time that we've had any real sort of Time Lord stuff.
And they chuck that name around a lot.
Yeah.
And you think, so it's got to build up to something.
Yeah.
And then the reveal of what it is is really good.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel like a cop-out. It doesn't feel like you're expecting the Doctor to open these doors and there's 12 people in ridiculous fucking, you know, neck pieces stood there going, ah, Doctor, it's been a while.
We would have fucking loved it if there was.
Of course. Okay. Yeah. but when he opens the thing and it's more of those distress boxes and you go, oh,
and
shit.
And you can feel the weight of his disappointment.
Yeah.
And
but also the realisation, this is a trap.
Yeah.
And the way he immediately turns on Aunt Uncle and is like, so how many of other Time Lords have you done this to?
Yeah.
But then also, even though it's not explicitly said in that moment, you think, so other Time Lords have been brought here, so where are all the TARDISes?
Yeah.
And then, okay, so the TARDIS is now in trouble. And that's when House surrounds the TARDIS and infects the TARDIS.
Yeah.
So
that, also, that stuff looks great. They
really
shot
good.
Really nicely. I don't know where they shot that. Did they go
a
to a
quarry
proper
in a lay-by in fucking Cardiff, probably. I think that Matt Smith's TARDIS looks much better with House's lighting than it does with the regular lighting.
It's funny, I sort of always forget that TARDIS exists.
Yeah, same.
It's just like, oh yeah, this existed for a time.
That, the rotor in the middle.
It's Bristol, isn't it?
Bristol blue glass.
Yeah.
But, or Bristol white glass for that moment in time.
Was it?
Well, it's white, isn't it? Because it's...
Oh, right,
it's transparent.
I see. Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry. That went over my head.
And that was a TARDIS. That was a console playset as well.
That was a console playset as well.
But it wasn't motorised. It didn't have any
bells. No, because this was that was when I think the writing was on the wall that budgets and stuff were starting to change and that things were starting to cost a lot more to do because, you know, there was no motorised parts, no lights, no sounds, nothing, which was a real shame.
Yeah.
But it's still a fun playset.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got it.
I've got it. Yeah.
Of course he's got it.
Of course I got it. Speaking of that moment when the Doctor turns on Uncle and Auntie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm Ood.
Oh, yeah, there's an Ood in it.
There's an Ood in
Nephew.
It.
Nephew.
Yeah, he looks great. Cool with the green eyes, actually. He looks very scary in a lot of shots.
Scarier with the green eyes.
Yeah.
I mean, that bit with Amy tickling his tentacles.
Yeah.
And then, that bit's really good.
But that moment when he turns on, when the Doctor turns on Auntie and Uncle... Again, it's one of these moments where I go, when the Doctor has this self-aggrandizing moment where he's like, you gave me hope and took it away. That's enough to make anyone angry. God knows what it'll do to me. It's like, oh, fuck off.
Yeah, I know.
It's like, shut up.
What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Like, are you going to grab the nearest blunt object and brain the pair of them?
Oh.
Probably not.
And then there's another one where he says, I don't know what to do. That's a new feeling. No, it's not a new feeling. You're in your 11th regeneration. We've had fucking 50 years of this bollocks. You've had moments where you didn't know what the fuck was happening.
There are two moments in this where...
Oh, it annoys me.
Right at the start, he goes, but that's impossible. And then within about 2 or 3 minutes, obviously Neil Gaiman's gone, word search. Have I used impossible already? No. And so he goes, that's not possible. which again is another one of those sort of things from this era where nothing's ever happened before.
Yeah.
And I guess for the audience in the moment, you've got to make them believe that because that's where the drama and the tension lies.
Yeah.
But also, I don't know, maybe that's just us, you know, splitting hairs. I don't think it's for that particular Matt Smithy moment where he's going, you know, I'm going to fucking have the pair of you. It's like, no, you're not. Shut up, posh boy. You're not going to do anything.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think sometimes that, I don't know. I just don't like that self-aggrandizing doctor. Mm. And I don't think this is necessarily just a Stephen Moffat issue. I think this is a modern Doctor Who issue that sometimes the doctors, I mean, obviously the doctor's up his own arse, but
up their his own arse.
Their own arse in the worst possible way. You know, I don't mind the doctor being a bit of a big head, but walking around like they're fucking God, that gets on my tits.
But yeah, well,
at least Sylvester McCoy had the decency to keep it under his hat.
But that was what made him interesting.
Yeah.
But when they start
suddenly... When you start wearing it on your sleeve.
Yeah.
Then like you're like,
the Tenant, wavy hair,
yeah.
Time Lord victorious.
Well, who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
No, that's what I want to see. I want to see the Doctor say that to possibly a companion and then say, couldn't give a shit.
That literally means nothing to me.
No.
Okay.
What do you want? Round of applause?
Yeah.
Get on your bike. A quiffy-eared cock.
of the dialogue in this, though, I will say there are a couple of really nice bits. Obviously, we mentioned some of the conversations with the TARDIS. Mm. The argument over pull to open.
Oh, yeah.
But I've always pushed.
Yeah.
But the police box doors were only ever meant to open outwards. I thought that was really, really great.
Yeah. It's up there with the whole window thing, isn't it?
The windows
are the wrong size.
I mean, that is just like, you know... Clayton, what else can we have an argument about with this prop?
Yeah.
Well, the fact that the doors never open out. Great, thank you very much. I'll write that in.
And the pillars are proper corners.
And that
being
as well.
Rounded.
And it should be made of concrete. Blah, blah, blah.
I'm sure Clayton went, do you want the list?
I've got a list to give him.
Where do I start?
It's lovely also seeing, obviously, the Doctor and the TARDIS conversing finally, but all the stuff about... you always bring home strays.
Yeah.
I think is a really nice line. And that seemed to go sort of beyond this episode. That was always a phrase that was used to describe companions.
Yeah.
And also, you know, I didn't get you where you wanted to go, but I got you where you needed to go.
Yeah.
And that obviously comes back in the final scene.
Yeah.
And that, I think, has stayed a part of the TARDIS mythology.
Oh, yeah.
And has always been something where you think, okay, so it's not where they've wanted to end up travelling to, but they always turn up right at the moment of a revolution on a planet where the Doctor can actually make an impact here.
Yeah.
And so you think, okay, so it isn't just coincidence.
Yeah, it's nice that they addressed that.
Autonomy here.
Yeah.
Which was really nice.
Yeah.
And I think for that moment, this is a nice story to have.
Exactly. I was just going to say the same thing, that in those moments, that is when the story lands. You know, the daft, dopey stuff, take it or leave it. But for those nice moments, it really works. And you were talking about other good lines. The line about him saying, Fumi, I've killed all of them. That's a great line for the Doctor. You obviously doesn't have quite the same impact now post the Day of the Doctor.
Sure. And also the fact that he was maybe convinced earlier in the story that they're all still alive.
Yeah.
And so he's like, okay, well, no, I am on my own. So, yeah. But, totally.
Yeah.
House messing with the TARDIS corridors, we obviously mentioned before, and the Rory aging stuff is really, really good.
They missed a trick not using a classic TARDIS.
Well, I have something about that.
Ooh, here we go.
So, Neil Gaiman wanted to use a classic series console room.
I'm sure he did.
But... budgets prevented it from happening.
Yeah.
So
if only this had come a few years later when they'd done Adventure in Space and Time.
Exactly. So the Eccleston Tenant TARDIS was brought out of storage for that reason. And then basically immediately went into situ at the Doctor Who Experience.
Yeah.
Now this went out May, I think it was, 2011.
Yeah.
And the Doctor Who Experience opened in March 2011. Did you go when it was at the Olympia?
I did, yeah.
Do you remember anything about it at the Olympia? Do you remember? Because for me, watching this, I didn't get that sense of nostalgia that I probably would get from maybe a Series 5 story like The 11th Hour, because that was obviously like a really big thing at the time, or from an RTD story like The Christmas Invasion. But when, I think it's called Madman with a Box, the
Oh yeah, that nice piece of music.
I could take or leave the rest of Murray's score for this story, to be honest. It all seemed to just sort of blur into one.
Yeah.
But when that tune played, I was immediately like sent back in time, that Ratatouille moment where he eats the Ratatouille for the first time and then goes back to being a child. I was like, I am in the Doctor Who experience at the Olympia. I went on the opening day.
Did you?
I was part of the first group of the public to go in. They had the press screening or the press version of it earlier that day.
Yeah.
I saw, I think it was Charlie Turnbull. Oh, Charlie State. Oh, one of the guys who used to... he's the guy that's not around anymore, I think. He passed away, that used to present BBC Breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
Bill
yeah,
Turnbull. So yeah, it was Charlie State, I think it was. And he came out with his kids. Oh. And they'd obviously gone in and done it. And also, Charlie is so cool-like. And the other person from the one who got done for being a nonce, who was in that troc band...
Oh, fucking troc.
Yeah, troc was a thing at the time. Troc was a thing. Troc was, if you went on iTunes and typed in troc, I mean, probably only one band came up, but troc was a genre.
Fucking genre of cringe.
Genre of, I can't believe what I'm listening to at the moment. Yeah.
Ugh.
Terrible. What was that? Chameleon Circuit.
That was it.
That was the name of the band. But the one who got done for being a diddler.
Right. A diddly dum.
A diddly dum, diddly dum. Came out as well, and I was like, "Oh look, they were." I mean, they were big on YouTube at the time, so it was like, "Oh look, it's them." But I remember going in for the first screening, and we sat down in front of this big arch, this big thing, and it was like, "Oh, that's an interesting room that's behind in the dark. That's over there. That's really cool." And then somebody came in and went, "Sorry, everybody, we've actually spoiled the next room you're supposed to go into." And they hadn't reset the doors, because if you remember at the start, the crack appears in the wall and then it splits open. And so we saw the Beast Below room
immediately
afterwards. And it was like, oh, this is a bit of a crap start of things. So everybody else had a great experience, but the first public group that went in didn't.
Remind me.
Yes.
When it was Matt Smith era... they didn't have the cringy Time Lord actors, did they?
No. Yeah. No, there weren't any actors in it at all.
No. Which was better.
So you went from the crack in time.
Yeah.
Then you went into the Beast Below. Then the TARDIS arrived, you went into the Matt Smith console room.
Yeah.
Then you went into the Dalek room.
Yeah.
And then I can't remember...
was it Weeping Angels then?
I don't even know if the Weeping Angels were there at that point.
Yeah, they were.
Were they at the start?
They were definitely there. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So then it would have been Weeping Angels after that. And then...
people always go on about how scary that was. That never really landed for me.
Because it's not quite London Dungeons, is it? It's not like you've got actors involved in that.
Yeah, they should have had some people
come
out and get you.
I think if you're six or seven.
Well, when I went on the last,
one
of the last days on the Cyberman Day.
The Cyberman Day?
Yeah, because you know they did theme days at
the
end.
No, I don't remember that.
Oh yeah, they did theme days at the end, and they did. I think there was a Dalek Day and a Cyberman Day, and we weren't gonna go. And then I think for some reason we were just like, oh, should we
just do it.
Just do it. Go on this before they shut down. We went. I think it might have been something like I took a day off, like from work, just like out of the blue. I thought, oh, go on, I'll just take the day off. So we went down and...
I remember you going.
And it was... I don't think we didn't even know it was Cyberman Day.
Yeah.
We just turned up and it was like, oh shit, there's Cybermen all over the place. This is cool. And we obviously you have to do... I mean, I always found the actual experience part, take it or leave it, really.
Really?
I mean, the first time... you do it the first time and you're like, this is good.
Yeah. I think,
and then like the next three or four times, you're just sort of like, all right, I just want to see all the costumes and, you know... look at the 80s console.
Go and eat in the Blue Box Cafe or whatever it was called.
Oh, yeah. Fucking extortionate cafe. And there was a little kid when the lights went out. And obviously, this was at the point where you had the actor leading you through, which always got my tits. I was just like, let's get on with it.
Sure.
Because I have no patience for that sort of thing.
No.
And a little kid, I think it was a little girl,
yeah.
said, when the lights went out in the blink room or the angel room, can we skip this part?
Ah, brilliant.
And the poor actress didn't know what to do and went, maybe you should just hold on extra tight to your mummy and daddy.
That's what I would have said.
Yeah.
Or you can piss yourself where you stand. It's up to you, little girl. Whatever you want to do.
I'd have gone down and said, sorry, kid, but if you look behind you, your mum and dad have already jumped off back into the past.
They're gone. They're gone. They're dead. Yeah, so because I remember, so it went from the Olympia to the purpose-built place in Cardiff.
Yep.
And then I think I went to the Matt Smith one when it went there once. And then I think I did the Capaldi one twice.
Yeah,
maybe.
I think I did the Capaldi one a couple of times.
Because when we went for Mission Dalek.
Yeah. So I must have done, I did the Capaldi one three times.
Were we led through the Capaldi one from the start, or did we just go straight into the museum?
Do you know, I can't remember.
I can't remember if we... Because it felt like we'd had the whole day at BBC Studios in the TARDIS
set. We spent an hour in the TARDIS.
And we got there about midday.
Yeah.
So I guess it was still open. But I don't remember going through the experience.
No. And I remember we spent ages just looking around the museum bit.
Yeah.
Which was great. It was a shame, really. I do think it was a shame on that day they didn't say, do you want to look at some of the other... sets, because they were filming stuff.
I guess they couldn't trust anybody not to leak stuff, because they don't let people on
the set.
It was
only the husbands of River Song.
Who gives a fuck?
The only thing
about
I would have leaked would have been, don't fucking wash it, shit.
But the Doctor Who experience was, because, you know, again, it was just through watching this, I just had a flashback to the Doctor Who experience. Yeah. And it was...
I found my programme the other day.
Did you?
Yeah, the Matt Smith era one.
Like, the Longleat thing is held up in the 80s as being like the Woodstock of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And I think in that era, obviously you had Doctor Who Live. There were efforts to kind of do big events.
Yeah, I wish I'd have seen that.
It was good fun.
Because I remember when it happened and my uncle said, oh, shall we go? I'll take you. And I guess what year would that have been? 2006?
I think it was 2011, 2010, yeah.
Yeah, so I would have been, I don't know, 18 or something.
So you were probably as far away from wanting to do that as possible.
And I was like, no, I was like, it's for little kids. But then I saw some clips the other day of it on YouTube or something, and I thought, I wish I hadn't been such a fucking
twat. The best parts are when the bosomy vampire girls came through and... threatened everybody.
Oh, see,
that was great.
At 18, 19 years old, I'd have been...
You'd have been chucked out. But yeah, that's good fun. But the Doctor Who experience was a proper, like... everybody went there.
Yeah.
And everybody went multiple times.
Yeah, everybody
has a good memory of going to the experience.
Yeah.
And there were Doctor Who fans that worked there.
Yeah.
And it was brilliant. And they always added new things to it. And they always updated people with like, hey, we're getting a Morbius thing in, or we're getting Zygons in, or whatever it was.
Oh, it was always good for that stuff.
Always good. And then the shop was, you know, extortionate, but the shop had decent stuff in it.
It was good, because when we went on the last day, everything was on sale.
Oh, I bet. Yeah,
so I got like a Rory for like a fiver,
who
I'd never bought. I'd never got any of the Rorys. And I was like, it's a fiver, go on, I'll get him. And then I got the Lavazzi. I got this Broly for like...
That was from... I got the Lavazzi from the
experience.
Yeah,
and I got it for like half price. Yeah. So I was like, oh, that's good. And
that's the only thing I ever wanted in there. I wanted that, and I wanted that license plate as well.
Oh, really?
They didn't have it in there when I went in. Oh. Got it.
They had the flatline TARDIS as well, didn't they?
In the shop, they did. And they had loads of... They had a big finish section, and they had like classic series DVDs across one side as well. And
speaking of classic series DVDs, did you see the St. David's Day Bad Wolf video?
What? No, what's that?
So when it was St. David's Day the other day.
Yeah. Oh, yes, I did.
And did you notice that when in the office, they had a whole shelf with all of Doctor Who on it?
I mean, if I was running Doctor Who, I would have that room.
Yeah.
And it would be like, hey, look, if anybody fancies just checking stuff out and just like going up to the thing and you think, oh, I wonder what that's about.
Yeah.
You could be a grip. I'd hope the script editor has taken a couple of those out and had a look at them.
Yeah.
Obviously we know Scott.
Doesn't need to.
You watch a shit ton of it anyway. But you know, if you want to grab it, just grab it. But that was cool to see that they just had, I mean, that's Russell's collection, I'd imagine, that he's brought from home.
Do you think?
Oh, yeah.
See, if I was showrunner, I wouldn't let my precious things be touched.
That's how you got the job.
Crew. Don't touch my precious things.
I mean, do we have anything else that... Okay, a couple of other bits and bobs, I think, maybe to cover. We've done the crying bit. I just want to say hello. That last scene at the end, I think I've mentioned this before, but I love Matt Smith when he is an 11-year-old boy. Are 11-year-old boys horny by that point? No, they're all right, aren't they? But when anything kind of vaguely sexual or awkward happens to him, and he becomes sort of a bit like, oh, no, I don't like that. Yeah. Like when Idris kisses him for the first time. But then the big bit is at the end, the bunk beds.
Yeah,
it's a bed with a ladder.
Yeah.
And it's like, because every other kid who doesn't quite get the conversation that Amy and Rory are whispering off camera are like... why wouldn't you want to have bunk beds?
Yeah.
So that's really lovely. That's really sweet. And then you realise what they get up to on the TARDIS.
Bunk beds.
Probably immediately after that story, because they both go off together and he said, go off and find your console room. And that's where fucking River Song comes from.
Yeah.
So I imagine River Song is conceived while Matt is dancing around the console at the end of The Doctor's Wife. And that's all I have left to talk about the story.
I mean, to be fair, you know, they're two young people. They've got bunk beds. They'll make it work.
They're two young people. You're not 48 years old. Fucking hell.
TARDIS is a big place. There's plenty of other places to populate.
I mean, this is going to blow some people's minds. This is going to be like a fucking sending you back in time sort of moment. A teaspoon and an open mind. Do you remember that?
No.
Good. Okay.
What?
That was the fan fiction Doctor Who website.
Oh, right.
What,
there was smut, was there?
Apparently. Someone told me.
Oh, right.
Neil Gaiman asked Stephen Moffat if he could write an episode over dinner.
Right.
The title is obviously attributed to a fake title.
From the 80s, isn't it?
But it was attached to the Caves of Androzani.
Ah.
And it was J&T trying to smoke out a rat from the production office that was leaking stuff. But it was called, up to 6 weeks before this episode went out, it was called Bigger on the Inside. Do you prefer that to The Doctor's
Bigger
Wife? Because
the
Doctor's Wife, where does that happen in the story, you know?
Yeah. That, it's a weird title.
Mm. It's like, I think that's Stephen Moffat. Isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
That's him winking a nudge to the audience.
Yeah, and I guess they'd already done The Doctor's Daughter. And I guess when you say, as soon as you release a title, The Doctor's Wife, fandom is up in arms. Doctor can't be married.
That sounds like Nixon in Futurama.
Yeah. Boss Nass from Star Wars.
You see the title in the title sequence.
Yeah.
And then from that point on, why is this called The Doctor's Wife?
Yeah.
You know.
My wife! Speaking of the title sequence...
You're my wife, Dave.
You're my wife now. Speaking of title sequences, Dave, what do you think of this one?
I like.
Do you? I think it's the most uninspired one. It's just clouds.
Okay, but I will agree with you that it basically does the Tenant title sequence blue to red. Oh no, does it backwards? No, it does blue to red.
Yeah,
like the Tenant title sequence, and then the TARDIS. But I don't know. I like the lightning bolts because it feels like that looks more like what a journey in the TARDIS looks like from the outside,
right?
Than the other title sequences have looked in the past, I think.
Okay.
The tumultuous buffeting caused, you know, from the lightning effects, I think looks quite good.
Right.
I love that thing you always get when they add a third member of the cast to a title sequence.
Yeah.
Where, you know, they've obviously...
We haven't accounted for this.
We haven't accounted for a third name to be animated. So everybody else's name looks shit animated by comparison.
Yeah.
When the logo appeared on screen, that was to me another one of those, this doesn't work.
Dr. DW who?
Yeah, because the DW was so much bigger.
Yeah.
And but it doesn't look like that on anything else.
No.
It's only in the title sequence where the logo looks wrong. I think even on DWM it looked better.
Yeah. I think what they should have done, rather than having it as Doctor DW Who, which was just stupid, they should have had Doctor Who, and then the letters should have collapsed in,
and then, span.
Then it turned into the TARDIS.
Yeah, that sounds good. That sounds good. Why aren't you hiring us?
I know.
Because of most of the stuff we've said in the rest of this episode, I imagine. This was originally intended to be the 11th episode of Series 5.
Interesting.
But it was bumped to Series 6 because of budget issues. The script was revised many times by Gaiman, originally writing it with David Tennant in mind as the Doctor.
Wow. Because he was Doctor Who, wasn't he, for Steve Moffat?
And that I watched Tennant's leaving thing the other day when they let all the poppers off for him on his... Poppers. When they let all the... They let all the streamers. You know, confetti off for him on the last day.
Yeah.
And he goes, okay, I will stay another year.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, I bet there were some people going, fucking, we've been having contract negotiations with you for fucking weeks about this. Don't joke about that.
Yeah.
But loads of characters and events in the story were removed because the production weren't entirely happy they would be able to pull it off.
I do, just going back to the David Tennant in Series 5 thing, that if they went into that series with Stephen, and Stephen was like, okay, we know from the off this is going to be your last series, just as you're going to be the bridge into this new era. I do love that idea of the Doctor crash lands, goes back into the TARDIS and dies, but then an earlier version of the 10th Doctor turns up and then meets Amy, and then
Then it goes through to the end,
and then he
regenerates to the end.
Yeah.
And that's a really good idea.
That would have been frigging cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I guess you can see echoes of that obviously remaining in Series 5 if that was the idea.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I can't imagine Series 5 without Matt Smith.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
I feel like they're kind of vanilla warm-up stories for the 11th Doctor rather than a continuation of the 10th Doctor's arc, because it feels like he's been through so much previously.
It feels like a breath of fresh air.
So he would have probably, he must have said, I will just do these specials and then go.
Yeah.
Because that whole special, the special year in 2009 is just him basically saying goodbye for an extended period.
Yeah.
So Gaiman, he basically became sick of the rewrites, and Moffat came in and did bits.
Yeah. I guess the bits that we've gone, ooh, you know, that feels very Moffat-y.
Quite.
Probably. There's a reason for that.
And like, even in the lead-up to filming, I found that they were having to adjust locations and stuff.
Oh, really?
In the kind of lead-up to things, which it doesn't really come across necessarily.
No.
That's all I've got, really. I think we've covered The Doctor's Wife pretty, you know, pretty well. Overall, what would you sort of give it? Just while I bring up what the Rodders at home thought.
It's interesting because when it aired, I hated it.
Yeah.
I just hated it. I just hated the whole idea of it. And then when I rewatched it, when I did my big marathon, I didn't mind it so much. And then when I rewatched it to do this, I still didn't mind it. I don't think I enjoyed it as much as I did the previous time. I think it's fine. I think it is very much a product of that period.
Yes.
And unfortunately, that whole era of stories, even if you get a good story, it's going to be bogged down by the same problems shitty dialogue, you know. Not in the sort of... It's funny, isn't it? Because we complain about the dialogue in the Chibnall era about being too...
Comic booky.
Yeah, and too obvious and just like too literal. And then with this... It's just
too sexy.
It's just horny.
Yeah.
It's just too horny.
Mm.
I mean,
it is.
It really is. I mean, crikey.
It's a wonder that his desk didn't fucking flip over while he was writing stuff, honestly.
It probably did. He was probably typing like that on an angle.
If he had a hand free.
Yeah. I don't get the love for it quite as much as it gets, because I know it's one of those stories that is held in
really
incredibly high regard. So, I mean, honestly, this would go on my overrated list for sure.
Yeah.
And I think watching it this time, this is probably only the third time I've seen it, in all honesty, because I don't think I really rewatched that era.
I think it's probably the same for me. What did you think about the Next Time trailer for the Rebel Flesh at the end as well?
Oh, yeah. fine. I mean, I didn't mind the Rebel Flesh, to be honest.
Rebel Fresh.
Yeah, so I mean, it's fine. It's a fine romp.
Just scrolling through this, it's interesting looking at all this stuff. Everybody is basically saying House is sort of the best part.
Yes.
The whole concept.
Anything to do with the TARDIS, like console being built and House and the scary stuff. I love all of that. And I wish that more time had been spent on messing with Amy and Rory and, you know, exploring the TARDIS more. Because they don't really explore the TARDIS.
Or if the Doctor was part of that.
You know, you don't get to see much of the TARDIS. You see a corridor. Mm. And I don't really like the corridor, to be honest. It doesn't feel like a part of the TARDIS.
There was a TARDIS swimming pool scene that was supposed to happen.
It was there,
apparently.
Yeah.
Pharrell Reed 04 says, solid 7 out of 10. House is a good villain. Wasted Michael Sheen.
Yeah.
Great concepts. And Idris is irritating. Mm-hmm. Patrice is the cool guy, a gorgeous atmospheric story with some of the most heart the show has ever expressed on screen. Moonman Unit 42 just says Helena Bonham Carter. James, it was half fun, silly, half absolutely terrifying, and sometimes you just need silly, scary episodes. I can sort of see where they're coming from there. Lewis Gibble, haven't watched it since first broadcast. Great idea. Mixed delivery, I'd say. I mean, that is from first broadcast, so that's been what? 13 years since you last watched that story.
Gosh. Give it a rewatch.
Kit's lost the plot. Love it. Love letter to Doctor Who. Well written. Love Auntie and Uncle. I agree.
Yeah, they're really
good. I think Auntie and Uncle are great.
Yeah.
Do you think Auntie is West Country or is she putting that on?
Not sure. She's been in a lot of stuff.
She's pretty good.
She was in Rogue One, I think.
She is. I've just realised. She's the pregnant woman that sits next to Tim in the office.
Yes, yes, she is.
And complains about her feet and all that stuff.
I think she's got a West Country accent in that.
Yeah,
isn't she?
I think it's something like that.
Yeah, so she's probably from down round this part of the, our neck of the woods.
Part of the woods. Ollie James X, overrated, unfortunately. It's just never clicked with me. Mm. Daniel Allsop, okay, the Idris stuff really great, but the House stuff is awesome. Bradley, overrated, delves too much into the fantasy genre, plus Idris's character is very grating. And finally, Doctor Who nerd. Love the Doctor's interaction with Idris and the TARDIS. Nice to hear the rift mentioned outside RTD's era.
It's true.
That
it's
is
true.
Mentioned, isn't it?
And I'll be honest, in those last scenes in the console rooms, I was watching it and I thought, there's something that feels quite classic Doctor Who about this, about a story that is... It's quite Edge of Destruction and Castro Volva. It's all set in the console room and you've got a lot of that TARDIS acting of like, oh, I could turn the gravity down. And then it's all that, all that sort of acting. I was like, this feels like
and
an old Doctor
Who. And
also
the that two of the companions have been left in the TARDIS to do fuck all for like the whole story while the Doctor goes off and does the most interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Also, classic TARDIS sound effects on the Junkyard TARDIS, only heard once.
Yeah.
But the Junkyard TARDIS and the walls, the Doctor's pulling, and I was like, I mean... I want to see where all of those other TARDISes look like.
Because
it looks better than your fucking TARDIS, mate. I'll say that.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Is it? Because I was watching it, I was like, it's a shame those roundels aren't like proper Doctor Who roundels.
Sure.
Right. I mean, obviously they
just
went.
But I like the fact that it's like it does look like those.
Yeah.
But it's obviously from another kind of TARDIS. Like, and I also really like the effect around.
Yeah.
The TARDIS because it kind of feels like this is like a botched together dematerialization.
Yeah.
I like that kind of
effect. Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting, really, the amount of references that just get tossed aside because he says, like, oh, I've rebuilt the TARDIS hundreds of times or whatever he says, and you think, oh, yeah, John Pertwee era, you know, pulling the console out of the TARDIS shell.
Putting it in a shed.
Yeah. You know, all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
And also the stuff about, I've got 30 versions of this TARDIS locked in my archive.
Yeah.
But they're from future versions of the TARDIS as well.
Yeah.
Which is quite neat. It'd be nice to count canonically how many we are
where are we now?
And how many more that Idris has got saved in a noggin.
Yeah. And even stuff like, I think they said at one point, the Doctor says...
Go on.
What was that?
A bit of hair.
Oh, thanks. I think the Doctor says at one point, oh, if you jettison some of the rooms, you'll get more thrust.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, that's a callback to Cast Revolver.
Yeah.
Obviously, Neil Gaiman loves his Christopher H. Bidmead.
It would be lovely. It is a very Chris Bidmead story with, you know, the love of the TARDIS.
There we are. That's a collection set. extra. Neil Gaiman
sits down with Chris Bidney
and talk about the TARDIS.
Fucking crack on, bloody hell. Yeah. You know, like, when we were doing the Doctor Who documentary for Channel 5, it was like, who have we got left to speak to?
Yeah.
Chris Bidmead. He's like the last surviving fucking script editor for Doctor Who.
Him and Eric Saward.
Him and Eric Saward are the three script editors for Doctor Who that are still alive in the classic series. I mean, I think that Andrew's all right for a bit.
Oh yeah, he's all right.
Well, I've got your business card, Andrew. We'll.
I had a curry with him.
You did have a curry with him.
I went out for a curry with Andrew.
I was like, hey, that script doctor book's pretty good. Have you got a copy with you? He's like, no, but you know, send me an email. Oh, I haven't done it yet. No. I should do.
You should do.
I'll send you an email and it'll be addressed in New Zealand. So if you can just pay the customs,
yeah,
that'd be great. there we go. The Doctor's Wife.
Mm.
What a monolithic story to have got through, I have to say. It feels like quite a weighty episode of the show to have sort of gone through, but we did it. And this actually took the place of the Five Doctors.
It did, yeah.
In our original run.
Yeah.
And so I can tell you,
I thought we just hadn't talked about a new series story for a while.
It feels like we should have.
13 years ago, new series is not new series.
It's
old.
Scary, isn't it?
Oh.
This is old hat. Doctor Who! Aging as I sit here.
Yeah.
There's bits of hair falling off of his face. Next time, we're going to talk about the most underrated episodes of Doctor Who. Matt, it would be great if we knew what we'd just spoken about, but unfortunately we don't know what's going to come up. It's not like we've just recorded that before we did this one.
We fucked in, I can remember language, English.
Wibbly wobbly timey wimey. I mean, by this point, I'm not even in this country that this is being uploaded from. I'm not here.
It's a menagerie.
I'll start fucking fading away.
Yeah.
But thank you very much for watching, everybody. Hope you enjoyed. Don't hate us too much. And we will see you in the next episode of The Review of Death.
Ta-ra.
Bye-bye.